name's Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 8/28/2003. I really have to speak right now. And my home group is the Singleness of Purpose group. It, to me, is the best home group in Tampa. And, no, it really is. And we are fellowshipping next Wednesday at Taco Dirty at 7 p.m. if anyone wants to come. Okay, so I was just fighting with my husband. And, which is pretty rare, thank God. But when it does happen, it happens. And, you know, it was this whole car situation. I was in a car accident over a month ago, and my car was totaled, and I got a little bit hurt, and it was very scary. But all that aside, I'm really lucky that this whole thing has been so drawn out, and I still have a rental car. And we finally got our money today, and then I'm like, I don't even want the car that we already put money on, and, like, we're just, like, going nuts, and, oh, my God. So I have hyperhidrosis, and thank you. My hands and feet sweat uncontrollably pretty much all the time, and I've been off and on taking some medication for it, and it works, like, really well. No, it sucks. And this was, like, about me, I think, since I can never remember. I've always been really anxious, doomsday, nothing's ever going to work out for me, I'm not okay, I need external things to latch onto and, like, suck the absolute life out of, and then maybe I'll feel a little bit better, but not really. It's very fleeting. And I was born to two very loving, adoring parents, and they tried for a long time to have me. My mom had 11 miscarriages, and then was blessed with me. I was born 2 months premature, so I have been sucking the absolute finances and trying them mentally and emotionally since the first day I drew breath. And I would have told you a long time ago that my parents were very absent, that I was a latchkey kid who, like, came home by herself after school, and, like, those things just really aren't true. I made them up, you know, because I wanted people to feel bad for me. My parents were really involved and tried really hard to figure out what was going on with me. I think I've had that God-sized hole that people talk about really since I was born, because I remember obsessing and thinking about things that I just shouldn't have been thinking of, like obsessing over my parents dying to the point where I couldn't know that they were gone, and just always needing, like, a lot of extra attention and help. And for me, thank God, all of those issues, those are really resolved by working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous today, even though at times I've had to get outside help. Sorry, I'm, like, still, I'm in the meeting, I'm out in the car fighting with my husband, everything's okay. I have a lot of shame and guilt still over the way that I treated my family, because especially now that I'm older, I see how they really tried to set me up for success, and I just, like, shoved it in their face and, like, wanted no part of it. And I see how entitled I was and how selfish I was, and it was really disgusting. So I started being sexually abused when I was 10 years old. And that doesn't make me alcoholic, but I know a lot of men and women in here relate to having a secret that they feel like they can't talk about, and to feeling that sense of shame and degradation. And I didn't tell anybody. I felt like it was my fault, which I know is, like, classic, right? And it separated me from my fellows. I allowed it to... I felt like if anybody knew the things that I had done and what had gone on with me, that they would know I was absolutely disgusting, you know, and unworthy. And that's just how I felt. And I needed a drink really bad. I was, like, so insanely anxious. I mean, a multiplication test would just, like, send me over the edge. Like, I would get sick. I couldn't handle it. It was too much stress. I just couldn't measure up. And so when I took that first drink of MD 2020, the orange, it did for me what I could not do for myself. And it just made all this come to a screeching halt. And it was incredible. You know, it made me right-sized, which is, like, what a lot. Like, not the amount of AA that I'm doing right now, because I'm going to, like, 3-4 meetings a week. That's not enough for a girl like me at all. But it did for me what a lot of AA, prayer, and work with a sponsor will do after, like, a solid year. And it was, I sucked at it right away. I sucked at it. I started having consequences really early. Started getting kicked out of school. I felt like it was such a badge of honor for me to be, like, getting kicked out of school, going to juvenile detention, going to the jack, as we called it. And being, it gave me a lot of street cred. And I'm like, I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm from the suburbs. And I thought that I was, like, hard, like, really hard, you know? And I wanted to be, like, in a gang, and I listened to that kind of music. I still do. And but I just, like, felt it. I related. They were speaking right to my soul is what I thought. But it was ridiculous. And I would have moments where I knew I wasn't where my parents had hoped and dreamed for me to be. Like, I came to in juvenile detention one time, and I had been, like, talking to one of the social workers or whatever, talking about my arrest, and this girl overheard me, and she was like, did I hear you say that you have two parents, and, like, you go to a good school, and your parents are still married? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, you know, like, my dad, I've never met him. And my mom is a, like, whore. She's a prostitute. And she's like, what are you doing here? And I would have moments like that where I'd be like, oh. Another one of those moments I had a couple years ago when I was trying to get into nursing school, and they made me unseal all of my juvenile records. And I went to Dade County to do that, and the clerk was like, so have you ever been to prison? I thought that was a weird question. And he was, I was like, prison, why do you say that? And he's like, well, just the juveniles that have this kind of record, they go to prison. So just like those humbling moments where I'm like, the grace of God is so big. It's so big, you guys. Because I didn't even want any part of it. I wouldn't even say the word God when I came in here. When I met my husband, when I had almost 9 years, I would not say the word God. I would say higher power. Still. And he just has continued to soften my heart and be the perfect gentleman and wait on me until I've been ready for him to enter into my life completely. And that's really my story. A lot of the stuff that I've done in here has been like, I shouldn't have stayed sober. I shouldn't have stayed sober. So, where was I? I really sucked at drinking. And I got in trouble over and over again. I did stupid stuff. Like, I stole my mom's car. And her, like, Chrysler minivan, you know. And got about, like, 4 blocks from my house and then plowed it into oncoming traffic. But I thought you could make a left turn, but I didn't realize you, like, weren't supposed to do that. So I get in this bad wreck in my mom's minivan, and she comes to the scene, and like a great alcoholic parent, she pretends like she was driving so that a week later I get my driver's license. And my parents were just always cleaning up my mess, bailing me out. And about a couple months after that, I created a six-car pileup on US 1, absolutely inebriated, out of my mind. I'd been drinking all day on the beach. Oh, I only have 5 minutes. I have a 15-minute speaker. Okay. I was like, oh my God, I would have sped this up so much. But good job, though. I'm sorry. So I kept getting in trouble, taking bars and crashing cars, as one of my good friends used to say. Let's take something, because you guys hear me talk all the time. I feel so bad, so I'm trying to say stuff I usually don't say. I had this horrible nickname in high school, and it was Lady Squirts. And because a bunch of guys got together, and they gave me a bunch of X-Lax in a milkshake. Which, that's not fair, I love milkshakes, and I shit my pants, so, but then, like, to get the guy back, I shit on his car. That's like, thanks, that's how we get down, so, just kept going on like that. I would have these moments where I would, like, know I wasn't living my life the right way, and I would be given an opportunity to change. Like, I would be put in an outpatient, or I would be put into, like, a drug intervention program for drug court. And I would think, like, maybe I can do this, and it would take but a week. Where I just couldn't do it, you know. I did not want to be sober. I could not, and I was willing to talk about drug addiction. I would not let you talk about my alcoholism, because that was my solution. You are not taking that away from me. I just knew I needed it someday, that I was going to need it. And so I would tell you, like, oh, I'm addicted to addictive substances, but alcohol, no, we're not even talking about that. It's not a problem. I'm only 17, you know, and I started to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people would tell me how cute I was and that they'd spilled more than I ever drank, probably both true, and I would sit and I would listen. And I would know that I had what those people have. I would relate to that language of the heart that they were speaking, like, God, but I can't be an alcoholic. I'm so young. But I just knew I had what you guys had. And so I went into my senior year. And there was this girl, she cheated for me all the time. Like, she would take tests before me, she would get tests, she worked, like, in student government and did all this stuff. She was total chameleon. And, drank the way that I drank, but then, like, also did school really well. I did not do school, like, at all. Like, that was way too much for me. I barely, like, unless I had substances in my body and I would bring alcohol, I did that whole water bottle thing in the locker, like, thinking I was so slick. And I could not go to school. You know, there was just no reason for me to go to school my senior year without being inebriated. And so she would take tests for me, do all my work, write my college submission essays. And, you know, she is no longer with us. And she actually got sober before I did. But so I, the end of my senior year, I went, after my graduation, we all went to P.F. Chang's. and something that I did a lot of the time because I would get so intoxicated, I would just pass out, just wherever I was, done. And like I did it on Mother's Day with like harps at this place called the Biltmore Estate, no, Deering Estate. And there's like harps and there's these bowls and like chihuly glass and it's like really nice, you know, and like I stumble in, I've been out all night and I sit down and then boom, just like face plant. My mom was so proud. And then so after graduation, we go to P.F. Chang's, a big group of us, and I was highly intoxicated, and I face-planted into a bowl of udon, and when I came up, like, shocked, because I was probably breathing in udon, and I was like, Mom and Dad, I'm a lesbian, and then I face-planted again. And then I proceeded, somehow, later that night, I ended up in Collier County, and I really don't know how or why, I don't know what I was thinking, and I kind of figured out that I couldn't drive, because I was crashing a lot of cars by myself, and so my boyfriend, now he was like always driving, except he couldn't stay not drunk, so he was driving, he passed out at the wheel, we went off the road on Alligator Alley into a 25-foot ditch, ripped the bottom out of the car, and luckily a police officer saw us do that. Unfortunately for us, we had a lot of stuff on us, and I assaulted that police officer and ended up in an ambulance with getting my stomach pumped and then came to in Collier County General Population. Which I think was like some sort of a scared straight kind of a tactic that they were doing. And so when I come to, all the girls are around me, and they're looking at me, and they're smiling, and they're telling me how crazy I am. And I'm like, oh, my God, they like me. And they get Skittles. This one girl, she was like a bigger, blonder version of me. Like, I hoped one day to be just like her. And she took me into her cell, and she put Skittles on my lips for color, and then she put a pencil under my eye. I don't know how she did it. I'm like, did she light it on fire? Like, something. Do you know? Like, how did she do that? Water. Maybe water. And then she said later we could get pills, and I was like, who would ever leave this place? This is wonderful, and they're all my best friends. I felt that sense of camaraderie that I get in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when my parents came to get me, I didn't even want to leave. I was like, I think I found my people, you know, and they're my best friends. I can't tell you their names, but they're definitely my best friends. And because I really didn't have very good friends. And so then that night, poor boyfriend and I stole my mom's car and wrapped it around the pole. The pole fell on top of the car, and we went back to jail. So that was my second and third arrest at 18, like big girl arrests, and I'd already had four as a juvenile. And my parents got me an attorney, and they started saying things like, oh, well, we think you might have to do this, like you'll just have to serve this much time. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Girls like me don't go to jail. Come on. And he was like, young lady, girls like you absolutely go to jail. And I've met scores of women since who are just like me and kind of like prissier and bougier than me who go to prison. And thankfully, I went to a rehab program, and I didn't take it seriously at all. There was a Spanish program, so I was like sleeping with the entire Spanish population. And didn't want to look at myself, didn't want to say that I had been abused, didn't want to talk about my alcoholism. That was off the table. I was there for other reasons. And can you imagine? I just got no better. I got kicked out of there and sent to a women's facility in Jackson, Mississippi called COPAC. Well, it's women's and men's, but I was in the women's part. Duh. And I did the same thing there, except I just started sleeping with women. Then I thought I discovered my core issue, like why maybe I hadn't been able, through all the drug courts and the diversion programs, why I hadn't been able to get sober, and it was because I was a lesbian, you guys. That was like always my out, but that's why. Shortly after that, overheard some of my therapists talking, and they were saying that this person was toxic to the therapeutic community. That makes my ears perk up, because I know I, like, immediately have to date them. And I met him, and he was everything I hoped he would be, and we left AMA together. If you guys have ever done that, it is magic. When you leave AMA together, because you're going to make it, because you're in love, like, real love. Like, it's for real. People are laughing, but you're like, this is for real. We're going to make it. We're in love. Right? That feeling. Whew. Nothing like it. But I'll tell y'all something. The feeling that I have with my husband, it's not that feeling. But it increasingly gets bigger and better all the time. So I think one day it's like leading up to that, and then it's going to sustain. Because in those other relationships, we would start out there, and it would be like, oh my God, like, we just have to become one person, you know, like, one person. And it was like, then it would derail, and it would die, and it would be like absolutely horrific in sobriety, you know? And, like, that, it just, like, it's not real. It's not real. But, of course, it's what I would want, or I think I want. And so we set out to overcome Mississippi together, and my drinking just took on, it just became completely different, because I was drinking now to prove I was an alcoholic, if that makes sense. But I would do things, like I'd now been exposed to AA literature, and I'd been to a lot of meetings, and I heard what you people would say in my head while I was drinking about the progression of the disease, about how it was irreversible, how you couldn't, you can't, you know, and I'd been going to meetings in Mississippi, so everyone had just like this southern accent. You know, you can't unpickle a pickle, you know? And I would just like be like, you can't unpickle a pickle, you can't unpickle a pickle. And I was like trying, so I got this job at a restaurant and trying to hang on, and like I went out one night and I was 18 years old. And so I would sit at this bar, and if I wore this like server's jacket, they thought I was older. Or maybe they knew I was underage and just served me, but I thought it was because I had this jacket on. And I sat at the bar and I drank a martini, and I thought I looked so elegant and cool. And that was the only time that ever happened, because then I made my way to Sam's Lounge, which is my kind of place. It's a hotel with a lounge attached to it, and you can drink all night long. And it's disgusting. I mean, like, you can, you know, yeah. So I started doing things that I thought I would never do to make money, things that I really thought were beneath me. And my bar just kept getting lower and lower. And I started to know exactly what they meant when they said pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because I would catch my eyes in the mirror and I would just shudder. And I don't remember trying to kill myself at that point, but I remember just shutting my eyes and wishing they would never open again. Because I was like, I'm doomed. Like, this is my life. This is all I'm good at. This is all I love, but then I hate it, but I love it, and I think it works for me, but it doesn't. Like, it was just such an awful time of, like, all of these conflicting emotions. And so I would go to meetings during this time, and I would pick up white chips. I picked up a lot of white chips. And I wouldn't really get numbers from women. People would say, call me, you can come over, I'll make coffee anytime. And I would just like, okay. And I'd be like, no, but really, I'm like done drinking. And I would hysterically cry the whole meeting, like full of that frothy emotional appeal. Like, you don't understand, like I'm quitting forever. I cannot live like this one more day. I'm so terrified. And I would mean it. Just like I meant I loved that guy. And I would go home and I would get drunk. And it started to become like, I am completely powerless. I've been rendered powerless over this. And I enrolled in college because I thought that that would fix it, right? And that was in January. And I intended on being sober when I started. And that just didn't seem to be happening for me. So I told the boyfriend, who really respected my hopes and dreams, yeah, that I had to be at class, because I was in college now, on Monday. And it was like late August. Oh my gosh, so I forgot. That's good that I forget now. So something I've struggled with, even coming in, and well into my, let me, like, not act like I'm not who I am. Well into my sobriety, I've taken money from older men in general. And, like, I'm not going to give you my whole fifth step or whatever and why I feel like I'm entitled to it and all my daddy issues. But I had this guy, his name was Larry, and I moved him in with me and my boyfriend. And I say we were one big happy family. And Larry shot and killed himself, shot himself in the head, and I found him in the apartment on August 11th of 2003. And when I looked at that blank stare on his face when I found him, I just thought, lucky. Because he didn't have to fight it anymore, you know, and I kept going. Like, that should have scared me into stopping, because things were happening around me that were just getting crazier and crazier, and I didn't miss a beat, you know. I started getting left alone a lot, so probably because I was so belligerent and awful when I would drink, and I know my husband can't imagine that. And I would walk across the street to the gas station, because my boyfriend also would steal my phone, and I wouldn't have a way of calling anybody because he was pawning it for drugs. And I would ask people at the gas station, like, I'll buy this 24-pack if you guys come over to my apartment. And they would be like, yeah. And then we would get there, and we would start drinking. And I'd be like, yeah, so this guy, he used to live in that room right there. He just shot himself in the head. And, like, it was crazy. The police were here, and, like, they picked up his body, and they brought it out. And they were like, all right, I got to go, you know. They would just leave. I was like, where are you going? So I got into college, and I didn't make it my first 4 days because I got really drunk and I took a bunch of Ambien on the day before, and I think I slept until Tuesday. When I came to, my boyfriend was gone with the car, which we had totaled our other car, so we had this rental car, which they had given me even though I was underage. So they told me, like, do not mess up this car, like. And now it was gone, and I was, like, freaking out, and I didn't know what to do, and I just wanted people to feel bad for me. I mean, I'm a really resourceful girl. Like, I could have gotten to school. Yeah. Like, I could take a bus when I was 12 years old from Palmetto Bay all the way to Coconut Grove to get alcohol at the one gas station that I knew of that served the minors. I could have figured out how to get a ride, I think. But I wanted to wallow and be like, poor me, come over, let's get drunk, let's get messed up. And then I made it to school right on time because my God, He is always right on time. And I walked into that class on August 28th. It was a Thursday. And I just knew that I wasn't going to, like, make it. Because all these kids seemed so well-spoken, so smart, so painfully normal. I knew that they didn't have to hide their keys before they went to sleep. That they didn't, like, worry about their printer being stolen. I knew they probably came from, I just started comparing my insides with everybody else's outsides. And I was feeling like, you know, I can't go to college. Girls like you do not go to college. You're only good at a couple things and not even, like, that good at those things. And it just seemed so dark, and I seemed, like, so afraid. I was a week away from my 20th birthday, and you guys, that seems so old to me. 20? Like, I couldn't keep it up. I really had that sense of, like, impending doom. Like, I could not keep the way I was living up. And I'm so grateful for that, and I believe that God seeded that in my heart today. So during class, a girl said, "Dr. Grummel, what's your favorite kind of wine?" And he said, "I don't drink. I'm allergic to alcohol." And that's all I heard the whole class. And so that's all I heard that whole class. And I went up to him after the class, and I was, like, rocking back and forth, and I was like, "I'm going to need a lot of extra help. I've been out of school for a while. And I don't know how to study because I'm a cheater." Like, I just was, like, laying it out. Like, I'm, like, a cheater. Like, I can't take a test. And by the way, how allergic to alcohol are you? And he put down a 14-year medallion. And he said, "This is how allergic to alcohol I am. You know, I was in a head-on collision. My best friend was in the car. He died instantly. And I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 19 years old." And I was like, "I'm 19 years old, you know?" And he was like, "Well, young lady, would you like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous?" And we went to a meeting that night. I'd been to that group before. I had picked up white chips there before. And I really don't know what was different. Something felt different to me. Something did feel a little bit different to me, but I didn't want to be like, "Oh, I'm going to get sober," because I really didn't think I could stay sober for any significant amount of time, not, like, in a facility. And I haven't done anything right, especially in the beginning, you know? Like, I found myself getting into a relationship when I had, like, 2 months. I finally left the guy. Which I had people from Alcoholics Anonymous come and literally take all of his stuff out of the apartment and put it outside and then tell him that the locks had been changed. I mean, that's what people did for me there. And got into a relationship right away with a female because that was my core issue. And didn't have success there either, you know? Because I'm always there. It doesn't matter what sex you are. And so I made it really about my sexuality, which is not what it's about. I wish it could be just about one thing. Like, it was that easy. Because what I've found the longer I stay sober is that my sexuality has, like, very little to do with, like, who I am as a person, what God thinks of me, how I relate to other people. It's just a small part of me. And couldn't make that work. Ended off just horribly. at 3 years because I'm a serial monogamist. And then I got into another relationship with a female. We made it almost 4 years. At this point, I was still going to meetings, but kind of begrudgingly. I had gotten through school. I'd gotten a master's degree, so that was kind of cool. 26 years old. I would speak when I was asked. I wasn't going to pick anybody up. Was not going to a conference. I was way too cool for that. And would not inconvenience myself for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I really reaped those rewards. So when something bad happened, she cheated on me. I beat her. Put my hands all, just like beat her. And got a restraining order put on me, which she dropped. And then tried to hurt myself. And found myself living with my parents, again begrudgingly, not appreciating that they would open their home to me. And because I thought, like, no, but I have this and that, like, I should be getting a big job, like, I'm owed this. I'm 6 years sober, like, where's my freaking parade? And my happy life that I thought I was promised here. And you guys, if you don't really work this program, you're not promised anything. You're only promised physical sobriety here. So that's all I had. And I was absolutely crazy and so miserable. So miserable. And so I'm in Miami, and I would call my sponsor in Mississippi because I wouldn't get a sponsor in Miami. And she would say, hey, Rachel, you need a sponsor in Miami. Hey, Rachel, it's Paula. You need a sponsor. She would just, like, say it the first thing when we started talking because she was, like, so over it. I would just cry. You know, I know she's moved on from me. I just can't do anything. And I really thought, my mom, like, sat me down. She was like, maybe this is you. Like, maybe you just sleep till 1 o'clock every day. Like, you're never going to really have a job. She's like, we need to maybe declare you whatever it is so you start getting paid by the government. She was, like, on board with it. She was like, yeah, I see that. Like, you're just incapable of life. And and it was, like, a really bad... I thought I really could not function, that I was incapable of holding a job. I really became unemployable. And I finally made it to a meeting because my sponsor in Mississippi kept saying, you got to go to a meeting. You got to go to a meeting in Miami. And I was like, see, the thing about that is, like, people in Miami are really superficial. She's like, it sounds perfect for you. And I didn't want to be around them because they would, like, incite that. They would bring that out of me even more. And so I went to a meeting. And this woman spoke who I had been in a treatment center with, except she was freaking happy. She had a year more than me because I had relapsed that year and a half. And she was, like, so happy. Her eyes were just beaming. Her name's Jerry S. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, okay, well, just know with me the God thing is non-negotiable. You're going to get on your knees, and you're going to ask something to take charge of your life. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm really desperate. I don't believe in that stuff. I still won't say God, but I'll try. And things started to shift for me. Like, I didn't get immensely better, but I got better. And I started to be able to show up at meetings. I met this guy who was like, do you want to start a home group? And I was like, that sounds stupid, but yeah, let's do it. Cool. And he would pick me up, and he would say, let's have a competition. Who can talk to the most newcomers in the room? And he was, like, so serious about it. And I'd be like, oh, this is so stupid. But I would do it. I would do it. And I started meeting people. And we would tell them, like, hey, we're starting this group, and it's going to be amazing, and it's going to be a young person's group, and blah, 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 blah. And he, like, taught me the whole little spiel to say. And a fellowship just, like, grew up around me. you know, and I did a lot of stupid stuff in that group that was, like, detrimental to it, which I didn't even, I was completely unconscious of the time, because I was just doing the best I could. I really was. Just doing the best, giving them the best I had. And, which was, you know, the, where I stopped a meeting, because we started out with, like, 5 people in our meeting, and then we grew to 30, and then we grew to 60, and then we started breaking hundreds. And, which I thought was, like, totally my doing with my outreach. And I, so I was the treasurer, and I stopped the meeting because I had counted the basket, and there was, like, $20 in there, which I thought was so insulting to me personally. And I stopped. I was like, stop, speaker, trusted servant here. We're going to pass the baskets again because you guys are, like, really cheap. And there's over 100 people here. I counted. And because of that, a bunch of people left the meeting. Like, we had this whole thing about it. And what I don't tell is after that business meeting where they tried to take away my position, it was saved by a very narrow margin. And I was so resentful that they would question the way I was doing my trusted servant job, that I tried to beat the girl's ass who made the motion against me. And meanwhile, screaming at her, doing this whole thing with a sponsee behind me, copying me. Yeah, come here. I took off my shoes. I was like, hold my shit. Like, this is what we're doing. And I was like, we need to talk. Like, why would you make a motion like that against me? And she just, like, calmly walked away from me. And it made me so much even, it made me irate. So I'm screaming at her in this church. And, yeah. So, making strides. Then, I ended up getting into another relationship, which brought me over to the Best Coast. And thank God for that relationship, because it taught me so much. I really thought, like, I finally found the one. This is it for me. That's how I always feel. except when I met my husband. Duh. And so then it brings me over to the West Coast of Florida, and I just, like, plant myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have more sponsees than I've ever had. I go to Sarasota YPG. I'm just, like, connected. So when he breaks things off with me, I'm, like, a little bit psycho, but, like, nowhere near, like, beating, restraining order, any of that. Huge win for me. And just, like, light stalking, like, driving by, like, who are you with, da-da-da, like, take me back, I'll love you forever, like, throwing myself on the car, like, no, it's not over. But, like, not horrible, you know, just a little bit. And so when I met my husband, because my sponsor said, because I would share at this person in meetings, I'd, like, raise my hand and be like, I just want everyone to know that, like, this behavior is alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, like, just, like, share his fifth step, basically. And she was like, you are not allowed to go to meetings with him anymore, and you're going to go to Monday Night Speakers in Petersburg, Florida. And I was like, ugh, why would I drive 45 minutes for a meeting? She's like, if you want me to sponsor you, you'll drive there. So I drove there. I get out of the car. I've been crying the whole way, mind you. Oh, it's over. I'm never going to love again. I'm so old. Walk up to the meeting. My husband shakes my hand. And I'm like, ooh, I could come here. This is a great, looks like a great meeting. And my sponsor's like, are you kidding me? So I totally put the feelers out. You know, I let him know I was single. So when he introduced himself to me, I was like, I'm Rachel, and I'm really sad right now because my boyfriend dumped me, and I just wish he would take me back. And he didn't call me after that. Didn't he know I was single? Didn't work at all. And it was months, you know, it was months before, and I actually had to say, Chris Pavone, are you going to ask me to coffee or what? And because I could tell he was going to ask Lori Brink. Could you imagine? Could you imagine? Yeah. So then and you guys, that thing had really eluded me, like having a partnership with another person. I really started thinking I was just not capable of it. And my sponsor kept telling me, you attract who you show up as in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if that is at all true, I have such a kind, sincere, honest, loving, I mean, before we got in the car and I'm like screaming, my brain's out, and he's just like, baby, I love you. I know you're nervous. I know you get scared before you speak. I know this is a lot. The whole car thing, it's been so much, babe. I love you. I'm like, oh, like, just yell with me. And he won't do it. He won't engage. He's like, he won't. It takes a lot. And then I get terrified. I'm like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Because you are scary when you're mad. But, the life that I have today, it's nothing like I ever dreamed, you know? It really isn't. And I didn't think that I could be happy in the kind of life that I have. But I, like, have moments where I feel at peace and I feel complete happiness. And I feel like God is making this path for me and molding me to be of maximum service to him. And when I'm really in that, like, I do things today that just boggle my mind. It boggles my mind that I can show up at work on time at 6:45. And I say that all the time because I really want you guys to know, like, that's incredible. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that at 7 years sober. The host of friends I have around me, I get to be, people ask me to be in their weddings today. I didn't have like a best friend until I had 8 years in here because I was incapable of being a best friend. And I had to get a newcomer named Rachel Lyons to be my best friend. And she's just kind of hung on. But my sponsor, when I tell her, like, God, can you believe what's happening and where I'm at and where Chris and I are at? And she just says, honey, you ain't seen nothing yet. And that's all I got. Thanks.